not very nice at all to hear what had happened to these two young children. We were very, very shocked indeed.
A director at the firm which supplied the tasers during the standoff with Raoul Moat has died in a suspected suicide, according to his company. 57-year-old Peter Boatman, who was head of operations at Protex Systems, was found dead at home in Northampton. German carmaker BMW is recalling just over 10,000 of its large engine models in the UK because of possible problems with the brakes. Almost 1,000 Rolls-Royces are also affected. Hundreds of worried parents have contacted Fisher-Price after it recalled around 250,000 toys and high chairs over safety fears. Some children in the US needed stitches after injuring themselves. Finding a four-leaf clover, kissing their sons twice before bed and growing sunflowers. These are just some of the things on the ultimate to-do list written by mum Kate Green for her husband after she was diagnosed with terminal cancer. She hopes Singe will find another woman after her death to help with raising their sons. He says that won't be easy, especially as they spent so much time together.
We've always lived life to the full. I mean, when Kate and myself were younger, we travelled extensively around the world and we went scuba diving. Kate was a scuba diving instructor, so hence the names Reef and Finn.
And they're heading towards the end of a weather-interrupted first day at the Ryder Cup at Celtic Manor. A short time ago, the USA led Europe 2.5 to 1.5 in the projected scoring. That's the latest. I'm Kelly Withers.
This is Phoenix FM. On 98 FM and online, this is Phoenix FM.
Good evening, it's Russell Quirk as usual on a Friday evening at just gone 7 o'clock, 7.03 in fact, on Phoenix FM. We have another very special guest this evening. I'll give you a little bit of a clue, although we have done a few promos, so many people will know who it is, but have a listen to this and see if you can work out who it is. So, good evening. It's me, Russell Quirk, again, as usual, on the Soapbox on a Friday night. And with me, a very special guest. He has been described by Amanda Holden, of all people, as having funny bones, which might ring a bell. Good evening, Charlie Wernham.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, thanks.
Good, good, good. For the uncultured out there that don't know who Charlie Wernham is, Charlie was the young inspirational comedy talent on Britain's Got Talent in 2008. I think probably goes down in history as the only person that's ever made Simon Cowell laugh. Isn't that right, Charlie?
Yeah, probably.
Charlie's here with his dad, who's his chaperone, just to make sure he behaves himself. Hello, Dave.
Hiya.
And there's obviously a local connection here. Charlie lives in Billericay, and obviously we're Community Radio 4, Brentwood and Billericay, as Phoenix FM, and Dave is a printer, runs a printing firm in Brentwood, Quest Print and Designs. So a little plug for you there, Dave.
Thank you very much.
You did make me promise. That's the only basis that they'd come on. So so Charlie, how's it going? Because you've had a bit of an escalator ride in your career, really, haven't you, since the whole Britain's Got Talent thing?
Yeah, it's been really good, I suppose.
Hang on, you've been on stage in front of millions of people, not once but twice. You're on, what are you on, School of Comedy? Harry and Paul, which started this week, didn't it? The comedy show, which I watched, so, yeah. Very, very funny indeed. Your clip, actually, a bit true to life, actually, a bit scarily real.
No, I just, it's going really good, Phil. I couldn't really ask for any more, really. After I'd done Britain's Got Talent, or when I was doing it, I just didn't think, you know, I just thought...
You thought that'd be it?
Yeah, I kind of thought, oh, I'll do this for a bit of fun after this, you know. That's it, it's over.
So what's happened since then? So you got right through to the semi, so you beat, I don't know, how many thousand people?
I beat quite a few people, and I was really happy with how far I got, and then I really enjoyed it, and straight after, a week after, I got a phone call from Sylvia Young Stage School, which is it's in London.
All right, well, they approached you?
Yeah, they approached me, and the head of the agency, said, would you like to sign up to our books?
That's the agency, isn't it, Sylvia Young?
Yeah, that's the main one in London, So me and my family, we've never really done anything about this. No one we know really knows much about it. So we just thought, you know, okay, then I like acting. I took drama for my GCSE, and just I love drama and love acting, and that's partly why I went on British Got Talent. And then since then, they got me some work, and the first thing I'd done was The Inbetweeners, which is I did the second series of that, and that's really
well followed, because that started again recently, didn't it? Was it last week? And I was looking at Facebook, and there were people commenting left, right and centre, well, Inbetweeners is on tonight. I mean, it's got a real cult following.
Yeah. I mean, the first series, some people knew about it, not a lot of people knew about it. Then the second series was showing, and by the end of the second series, everyone knew about it. And then the first series got repeated, and so the second, and I think that's where it took off. And then they did their third episode, third series even, and it's taken off now, that show.
And you've been in all of them?
No, I've only been in one episode on the second series, but it was just an honour to be in that, because it's such a good show, funny.
I bet. And obviously the Harry and Paul thing this week as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they're rather legendary, aren't they, in terms of comedy talent?
They are. My family all love them. My uncle, my dad, everyone in my family knows Harry and Phil.
Well, people that are as old as me and your dad, well, your dad's obviously substantially older than me, aren't you, Dave?
Yeah.
Grew up with the whole Harry Enfield, Paul Whitehouse thing, the Fast Show, the Harry Enfield Show, and
sort of started, didn't it? Harry Enfield started on Friday Night Live, when he was doing Stavros, which was his first ever.
And loads of money.
Yeah, for Stavros was first, a good 3 or 4 years for loads of money.
Yeah.
And he used to do just 10 minutes on a Friday night, on the Friday Night Live. And I even used to come home from the pub early to see his
you
clip.
You did?
Yeah, I know.
He was good then.
Albeit with 2-4 packs of lager in it each
year. Yeah, and a Chinese, obviously. But he was fantastic on that. And when Charlie was filming, I went with him and spoke to him about it, and he just couldn't believe that how Harry Enfield took off. And Harry and Paul were just... legendary when we were growing up.
I mean, the thing is, nowadays, a lot of kids are like... Because a lot of my friends, I'm still like Charlie to them. I'm not like... Because they knew me before I started acting and comedy and all that. And they're like, what are you up to now? And they all know School of Comedy and watch it. And I was like, well, Harry and Paul starts. It's like, Harry and Paul, what's that? I went, do you know Harry Enfield?
Because there was a break, wasn't there, between Harry Enfield... The Harry Enfield Show, the Far Show, they seemed to sort of not do much for a few years. And now they're back.
Really,
so people your generation perhaps
They don't really know about Harry and Paul much. But they obviously... their parents do. But when I said, you know Kevin from Kevin and Perry, the film Kevin and Perry Go Large, and that, they're like, of course I know that. Then they're like, oh, got it, yeah, I know who that is now, yeah. And then they just kind of they watch it and they really like it. But because it's quite old-fashioned comedy, some of them, they're not really kind of warm into it, but just like they do like the sketch I'm in, was called The Dysfunctional Family, because anyone can relate to that, because they all see it on the bit, you know, around
anyone?
Brentwood. Anyone
what are you trying to say, Charlie?
You know, can all relate to the benefits family. We all know one family, don't we, really, that's claiming benefits.
Do you want to name them? Go on, who's talking about?
No.
I'm joking. Don't. Listen, we could talk about this for ages and ages and ages. What I normally do, this might bore you to tears, guys, but I tend to go through the papers first, and I'm sort of, you know, normally fairly sensible and serious about
That's funny, Russell, because I didn't know you could read.
Yeah, I can. I've had to learn for this show.
All right.
But, actually, I'm going to get you back for that, because we're going to talk about your school later, because your dad's been telling me things, so... Oh, dear. Anyway, so we'll go through the papers. Hopefully, I'm sure you two, because I think your dad's almost as funny as you are, actually. I'm sure he probably writes some of your material.
Bless him.
Thanks, John.
We'll go through the paper and just you know, have a look at what's happening in Brentwood, because, again, obviously, we're a Brentwood and Billericay-based radio show, a radio station and radio show, and obviously it's important that we look at things that are happening very, very locally. Page two is the most important story of the week, I think, right at the bottom. Lovely picture, handsome young man and a lovely lady. I don't know if you've seen that, Dave. Reason I'm lingering and going on about this is because it's me. It's about disappearing, or rather not laid, yellow lines. It is actually a really boring story, which is probably why, Dave, you're sitting there rolling your eyes.
I just can't seem to work out how you've managed to have no yellow lines directly outside your house.
What, so I can have a parking space?
Yeah, and leave a cone there so you can get there when you get home. It's quite amazing, actually.
You're even pointing.
The thing is, you're pointing at the one end of the yellow lines and saying, I wish they were bigger so I could get my big car in there.
Yeah, no, what I'm actually saying is, don't park here. This is for me. If you look at the top of the cone, it's actually got a little nameplate on it that says,
RQ, only.
No, so there's, again, tongue-in-cheek, it's... A story where the council very properly decided to put yellow lines down along my road, actually, in Greensleeves Drive, and there was a car park there, and so therefore they couldn't complete a little stretch for about 3 or 4 metres in between. And at first it was just one of those things, but now 2 or 3 months on, having chased the council 2 or 3 times to get it done, it's not funny anymore, because of course it's defeating the whole object of having the yellow lines there in the first place, because people are parking there and can't be ticketed.
So people actually do park in that space thinking, oh, this is fine.
They do, because it's a gap, there's no yellow lines there.
It's probably the only free space in Brentwood, you do know that.
Yeah, actually, I'm about a mile and a half away from the station. I think it's the nearest place you can park. But the lovely Joan Holmes, actually, who's one of my local councillors, in addition to Karen Chilvers and Nigel Clark, she's on the case and is trying to help by getting the lines painted in. I'm hoping she's going to turn up tomorrow, maybe with some of her colleagues, with a tin of yellow paint and a brush, and maybe do it herself. But
and a long rule.
Yes.
Quite lucky, actually. They actually went round the vehicle.
Yeah.
Or over it.
Or over the car, that'd be funny. Have you seen that car with the go faster yellow stripes
across the middle? Yeah, don't park on it. Right, front page, guys, what do you make of this? So the town hall's for sale. It's not, but that's the inference. The council, let me just give you the background, have decided in this austerity shake-up that everything should be on the table in terms of saving money, and I think that's absolutely right. I don't think anything should be not discussed. I do think, as I said last week, that certain things perhaps should be protected, like the mayor and so on. But when it comes to things like this, bearing in mind the town hall costs, according to the Gazette, about £500,000 to run, just in terms of maintenance, heat, rates, because obviously they have to pay business rates, because most of that goes to the government. It's an awful lot of money, and I think, very wisely, they are considering its future. Whether it's kept as it is, whether it's redeveloped, whether it's, you know, halved and half of it's used for one thing or whatever, I think there's a lot of options that could be discussed. So, what do you think, chaps?
I heard that they was going to run it out to the World Hide and Seek Championships.
Why is that?
Because it's so empty.
It's so big and empty.
Oh, here we go. It's so empty. You've been talking to councillors, haven't you? And the Gazette.
But I must admit, there is apparently somewhere in the region of it used to house about 350 employees, and now about 170 or something.
I don't know what the numbers are. They did lose
something like that.
Did lose some a year.
Plenty
or so
of empty,
ago.
Empty rooms.
Well, yeah, it's a bit of a rabbit warren, I have to say, and it's what the council are saying. Of course, it's not fit for purpose because it was designed and built 53, 54 years ago. So we'll see what happens with that. Someone did say to me in the street, actually, that given some councillors perhaps aren't particularly vocal and visible, that if they start knocking it down, they might see a few councillors scurrying from a cupboard or under a desk here and there, but I couldn't possibly comment. Anyway, right, page two, this is something I think you guys are really going to get your teeth into. This stalker thing, which keeps coming up. Steady.
Peter Oakley.
Yes. What a chat.
I mean, before you two guys let rip, I mean, let's just say there is a serious side to the whole stalking thing. I mean, this guy has absolutely bombarded poor Fiona Bruce with dozens and dozens and dozens of cards and messages, and then
loves it, really.
Well, we all like a bit of attention, but I'm not sure I like, no disrespect to Peter Oakley, he's undivided attention commissioner's, Fiona Bruce's head, really. He's now, I think the question is whether he actually is mentally ill, and he says that he's not, and the prosecution say that potentially he is, and I think it looks like sentence has been adjourned and so on. It looks like, according to the Gazette, things did get a little bit nasty. Offensive letters with satanic references and goodness knows what else going out to Sainsbury's.
Boots.
Not a happy customer. Yeah, Boots. Highwood Hospital. How can you have a vendetta against Highwood Hospital? For
and a new surgery.
And the Brentwood United Reformed Church. I mean, they're pretty good people as far as I understand. But so it's all up for psychiatric reports. We'll see what happens. Moving on to that, a very odd story. I know, Dave, you commented on this before we came in. You do make me laugh, you two. Page 3, bailiffs force their way into the shop of an innocent man. This is the East Ham estate down there in Brentwood South, as it is, where a chap has had to avert bailiffs breaking into his shop and obviously thought that he was being burgled. It turns out, I think it was Laura Russ, actually, who's the landlady of the nearby Chuff pub, came out, called the police. It turned out it wasn't burglary, it was bailiffs trying to break into his shop because the rent hadn't been paid to Newham Council for 2 years.
Yeah, by Martin's newsagents, apparently, the previous owners, apparently.
Yeah, and what's odd about this?
It is very odd because they called the police because they thought they were going to burgle the place. Yeah. Well, actually, they were trying to change the locks, not break them.
yes, they were. But what's a bit odd, and, you know, talking out of turn here, as I sometimes do, The chap that owns the shop, or is the tenant of the shop, in fact, obviously the chap that runs the ANS News store, has said that it admitted that he didn't pay the rent and that the post that would have gone to him was diverted to Martin's because Martin's used to be the shop tenant, and that therefore he didn't see any of the rent demands. Now, surely it must have struck him that in 2.5 odd years of trading, he hadn't paid the rent. He must have presumably wondered why no one had asked.
And yeah, I mean, it was a bit odd. He did put it away, though, sensibly, so he had the money when they asked. Well, it's probably one of those things as a business owner, you would think...
Well, human nature.
Human nature. I think it's human nature.
Yeah, I just
find it a bit odd that the police arrived, checked all the paperwork and... let them do it. Also, the other thing, like the Martins apparently had said to him, if you get any mail for us, please rip it up and put it in the bin, not send it on. If you're reading, that's what they said to him.
Well, and I suppose it shows Newham Council yet again in a bit of an incompetent light, doesn't it? Because Newham Council are the tenants, the landlords there, and obviously they operate a lot of the council housing down there too. And obviously they've been in the news in the past for being, let's just say, a little bit free and easy, a little bit unfair, some would say, with regard to demands for maintenance costs from their council tenants. And this sort of highlights again the fact that, you know, Newham Council, again, age of austerity, everyone's trying to get money in and, you know, look down the back of the sofa for every spare penny, and they've spent 2 years chasing rent through someone that's not the tenant anymore, and again, apparently they acknowledged that they'd lost the paperwork, so they chased the wrong person, and you would imagine maybe would have gone down there in the last 2 years, visited this chap and said, ah, yes, now we remember, you've changed hands, can we have some money, please?
It's all very faceless from a council that's miles away. You know, these sort of things happen. These happened in Billericay before with the area where we came from, which was owned by Waltham Forest Council.
Yep.
And these things happen, it's out of sight, out of mind, really.
Yeah, bit of politics. Page 8, we've got Lord Hanningfield, who's the former leader of Essex County Council, who is set to face trial under theft charges. This relates to expenses. It goes back to the whole expenses thing, which drags on and on and on, certainly for several politicians, including 3 Labour MPs that are also due to be in court soon. And I've got to say, innocent till proven guilty first. You know, Lord Hanningfield is denying the charges very strenuously, will go to trial, and obviously the trial outcome will obviously tell us whether the verdict is guilty and whether, you know, he did do what they allege he did. But a feather in his cap, I think, if one can say, that the 3 Labour MPs have been fighting tooth and nail to get permission to fight the criminal legal action from the point of view of the Crown Prosecution Service on the grounds of parliamentary privilege, on the basis that they're special because they're parliamentarians, or were, and therefore they're not subject to the usual normal laws of the land, which I think is an outrageous position to try and advance. And I've got to say that this article here on page 8 says that Lord Hanningfield is not advancing that particular argument, and he's going to go to trial, take it on the chin or otherwise. So I have to say, innocent till proven guilty, and fair play to him for that attitude, really. Page 14, one of my favourite things. We had Ernie Clark on the show last week from Hopeful Animal Sanctuary, and very touching, very emotional show it was for me, I have to say, because Ernie was very, very philosophical, very humble about his condition. He's been diagnosed with terminal cancer at the age of 83, as I think he is, and you know, what he basically had to say about it last week on the show was, I've had a great life, you know, sort of no hard feelings type thing, which I think was an amazing attitude to take, really. So there's an article here. Brian Blessed came down, I don't know if you've read this, chaps, and sort of hosted the open day at the sanctuary last Sunday. There were hundreds and hundreds of people there, all sorts of people putting the stocks and things thrown at them, councillors, the editor of the Gazette, funnily enough, and so on. They raised about £6,000, which is a nice pot of money for them. Actually only keeps them going for about 25 days, I might add, so it doesn't mean that no one needs to donate any longer. But anything in the papers that you spy, chaps?
There's something that did make me chuckle. It was on an Essex-based thing. Was a degree for Lord Hattersley. Excellent. But not only the degree he got was a Doctor of Letters. Unfortunately, the only letters he didn't seem to become a Doctor of was PM, apparently.
No, he didn't. You're right. So where's the Essex connection there, then?
I don't know. He says a well-known politician, broadcaster. It was at Anglia Ruskin University.
Ah, which is sort of Chelmsford
way,
Colchester-based, isn't it? Yeah. But before we go on to some music, there's something else that isn't in the local news, but I had to pick out. This flashed up on Twitter and all sorts this afternoon. What do you think of this, gentlemen? Nottingham City Council have removed the conkers from a particular tree in one of their city centres because they're worried about health and safety fears. Not just the conkers falling off and hurting someone, but also the fact that apparently people, you might have done this, Charlie, in fact you probably still do, throwing sticks and stuff at the trees so that the conkers fall out. Yeah, you do all that. Well, what they're worried about, of course, is that someone might be walking along and one of those sticks might accidentally divert into their heads and then someone would be sued.
To be honest, most youths at my age around around Billericay generally just throw the sticks straight at the people. they just throw them straight at the pedestrians. So I don't think there's much to be worried about.
So you cut out the whole conker tree thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it ricochets off the elderly person and knocks some conkers down, then you've had a result.
That's 10 points where I come from.
I'm sure many of your peers at your age would strongly disagree with you, Charlie.
It is amazing. I mean,
model of good behaviour.
The guy who picked them in the cherry pick can now be found outside the local school with a bag of shoelaces and a skewer for any children that would like to go and play.
Well, he's got the monopoly. You can sell the things now.
He's got the
fortune. There's no conkers left in Nottingham.
The conker cartel he runs now.
But look, this show's called The Soapbox. And I do try to be careful that I don't sort of sound off with sort of too much opinion. I try to be balanced. But this is absolutely ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, wherever next, you know, we're going to say that people can't take their friends' kids to school. Maybe we should ban school dinners, actually, just in case.
Thanks, you ban school full stop.
Well, I suppose you would. And again, we will be coming on to that, because as far as you're concerned, I think that was banned about a year ago, judging by your results and the amount of detentions you get.
Let's take knife and forks away at dinner time and use your hands.
Exactly,
you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
Health and safety
gone
mad.
You'll have to wear gloves in case you burn yourself.
Indeed. It's all getting very, very silly. Very silly. And it's Labour-controlled Nottingham Council. Not that I say that, obviously, with any political angle at all.
Not.
But a load of old, well, conkers, really.
Talking about a load of old conkers, they have a story on page 20. This just absolutely baffles me.
What is it
worth? Mystery surrounds overnight appearance of a solid ink-like substance left on a conservatory, which looks extremely like bird poo after the bird has had a banquet of blackberries.
He's five a day.
He's five. By the look of it, he's had more than about 15. He's had his week in one day. But it is amazing now that they can't actually work out what it is.
Yeah, it looks pretty obvious, doesn't it?
Does look blatantly obvious.
It's sort of coloured bird waste, shall we say.
Yeah.
Is this the article that says they thought it was a paintball attack?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
a conservatory.
A paintball with one paintball.
Saying in present company, but they've got to be having a laugh, surely. But, okay. All right. Well, look, let's have some music and then we'll come back.
Time is short and life is short.
goes to Jam, a town called Malice. I thought it was quite appropriate having Charlie Wernham here because he's a bit of a cheeky chap, actually. So, yeah, Phoenix FM Soapbox. It is, where are we? 27 minutes past seven. We've got 33 minutes, hopefully, of some good chat to go. So, Charlie Wernham, hopefully you don't mind me saying this, but from Britain's Got Talent and... as we were just saying, The Inbetweeners, the list is quite extensive, isn't it? Harry and Paul, yep. And School of Comedy, of course. Ashes to Ashes. And Ashes to Ashes, Dave's just whispered. Don't need to whisper, mate. Ashes to Ashes. Sorry. Be proud.
Yeah, I have read it. Ashes to Ashes was a really big, good show, you know. Really
so,
good
so what
thing.
Happened there? Because that's not comedy, is it? That's active. An acting thing.
Well, I kind of. As if you watch Ashes to Ashes, you kind of you know there's some serious bits in it, and there's some very funny bits from Phil Glenstone and Kenny Halls and that. And I had quite a funny part, and I had 2 days working on there, and it was only I was out of the one episode. I was in it like every I kept popping up every now and then, interrogated.
Did you play a cheeky chap?
Yeah, I did.
There's
yeah,
a surprise.
I asked Kenny Halls what a bra size was.
Was that in the script, or you just asked her what a bra size was?
Well, before I read the script, I did ask her, but somehow it ended up in the script. No, yeah. And there was just some funny questions I got to ask when I was being interrogated. And it was a funny episode, to be honest with you.
It's good that you're diversifying and it's not just comedy stuff. I mean, a lot of people do that, yeah. Don't they? Bradley Walsh has done it, Shane yep. Ritchie's done it with varied success. And, it's good, I suppose, it's particularly because you're how old? 16?
I'm 16 on Sunday, yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
No, it's not. I'm sure people are that are listening. So, you know, it's good, particularly at this early age, to have this diversification ability so that you can decide in the future, I guess, whether you go down the serious route or the comedy route,
yeah.
I guess. So, but you are a funny guy. You're going to tell us a joke? Let's put you on the spot, isn't it?
You want to know a joke?
Do you know any?
I've got one really big joke.
It's clean, isn't it, Charlie?
Well, my joke is...
It's clean, isn't it, Charlie?
Russell Quirk trying to get re-elected for councillor. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's quite amusing.
Or Russell Quirk being a councillor in the first place. A lot of people think that's really funny, actually.
No, I'm sure you do very well.
Yeah, well, I tried to. But, okay, tell me, I mean, the psychology of all this comedy thing, is it just a natural thing, then? Do you write stuff and then perform it, or does it come naturally and you just do it?
I don't know, I've always...
What's funny? How are you funny?
For my age, I'm pretty quick when it comes to comebacks and, going back to
school. Especially when it's having a go at me, evidently. Yeah.
improvisation. Yeah, he's good at improvisation.
That's the main thing I'm good at, is improvising quick off the cuff kind of things. And in class, going back to school again, you know, someone says something and you have to come back with a comeback pretty quickly. And it's just, you know, it's just saying I've kind of...
Naturally got it, haven't you?
Yeah.
Mm. And obviously, the TV stuff that you're doing, though, is obviously scripted. But the Britain's Got Talent thing, I suppose you sat down. I mean, what happened there? I mean, you didn't just stand up and do it. You presumably wrote it.
It's quite funny, actually. For the very first audition, I had a really long... I had quite a long script, and it got cut short, because obviously...
Well, they cut it short.
They cut it short, like, you know, Simon put his hand up and said, stop there, kind of thing. And when I got through to the semi-finals, I got... We went up for a day, and it's kind of a stage that you practice your routine, make sure the lights and your radio mics.
This is after you got through to the semis.
Yeah, this was like a day before my thing.
Yeah,
and we was on our way home in the cab, and my dad got a call saying, you know, sorry, but Charlie's script's too long. So it's very, very good. Can you keep it cleaner? And can you keep it cleaner? And can you cut it down a bit?
In half, really.
So in other words, can you change it completely?
The day before.
And the thing is, when you write a script, you learn it in order. So what I do is link things on.
Was that how you remember it, you mean?
Yeah, that's the way I remember it, is link things on. And in the cab, me and my dad decided to write my semi-final script on the way home for an hour and a half in the cab. We were sitting there
with
a little bit of paper.
Your dad's got to take a bit of credit for this, then.
Argos pen the cab driver had.
Argos on the back of an A to Z on a lottery ticket or a bit of newspaper or something. I don't know what it was, and we quickly did it and then went back up the next day. And
you learned it, but you had 24 hours to learn, what was it, a 3-4-5 minute routine?
Yeah. Oh, is it? Yeah, 3 minutes.
Which doesn't sound a lot, but I tell you.
Oh, it is when you're up there.
Yeah, I bet it is. Well,
if anyone tries to stand out and talk and tell a joke and story for 3 or 4 minutes, it seems like an hour. Yeah. It is really difficult.
I watch a lot of live at the Apollo things and that, and the Michael McIntyre's Comedy Bro show and that, and you see people on there, and people think, you know, that's an easy job, you know, get up
but
there.
They're
just
doing
do
it
that.
For like half an hour.
It's not Lee Evans. He's probably one of my biggest comedy heroes.
I was going to say, who's your comedy hero? Yeah, so you beat me to it there, but Lee Evans, because obviously he's a Billericay guy, isn't he?
Yeah, well, Joe Pasquale. I love Joe Pasquale.
Mm-hmm. He's on tour soon.
Yeah, I know. Well, I loved Joe Pasquale like my whole life when I was growing up and that. And then he's just silly, isn't he? He's not rude. He's just silly. And then I started. And then I watched when I got a bit older. I watched a bit of Lee Evans, and I loved him. I just loved that the physicality he uses in his routines and the stuff he does. He's just insane.
But you do a bit of that. I mean, I rewatched Ready for Tonight. I rewatched your semi-final.
The live semi-final.
And you're quite abstract, aren't you? You're quite animated in your sort of, you know.
Yeah, I think
around.
That's important because, like, you know, if anyone has seen Joe Pasquale, he uses a lot of props and he has a sidekick called Reynard who comes on and he's very animated and so is Lee Evans. The sound effects he can do with his voice and just. He runs around the stage and he sweats buckets, you know. And I do like some comics that stand there and just kind of tell jokes.
Because some of them are actually very dry and they've made a career. I mean, people like what's his name? The very, very serious one. His name escapes me, but Jack D.
Jack D.
He's very. I do like.
But
Jack
he's the opposite, but you know, he's funny because he's so straight, I suppose.
And he's reasonably. And he's very the ones who seem to stand there, very sarcastic and satire sort of comedy.
Yeah.
Rather than the animated.
Like Michael McIntyre, he runs around the stage a lot, and I don't know. I do like to. You know,
I think stand up is somewhere where Charlie will return to. The problem is with stand up when you're 13. There's just no call for a 13-year-old stand-up comedian.
Well, you've got to be careful, because I guess... I mean, I was going to ask you, Dave, actually, a really important question, quite a serious one, so I know we want to have a bit of a laugh here and there, but no, a serious question that I'd ask, because I've got a son, as you know, exactly the same age as Charlie. In fact, his birthday's on Tuesday, yours is... What did you say, Sunday? Monday?
Sunday.
And, you know, Charlie's obviously been doing almost an adult stand-up act, as it was almost that. And in fact, what you've just said about having to clean up the act ready for Britain's Got Talent is sort of quite interesting. I mean, how do you feel as a dad with Charlie at the age of 13, sort of having to do particularly this Harry and Paul stuff now? And I know he's a bit older, but the whole swearing thing and listening to the whole adult humour thing?
It's one of those things. As a teenager, growing up in a mainstream school, you know, even at 13, 14, you know, they're going to hear plenty. There's going to be plenty of that. There's language.
They're swearing in school. There's,
apparently so. Yeah, I mean, it didn't happen in our day. Oh, no. But, no, it's like, it's going to happen, isn't it? And this is scripted and it's used properly. I mean, there has been a few excellent comments from producers. I mean, the producer on The Inbetweeners, which is a really heavily sort of adult humour show.
Yeah.
Actually said to me, the way Charlie can swear, he's either natural or he's just a fantastic actor. I said, yes, he is a fantastic actor.
Well, actually, the truth is probably the
They hear it. I mean, I haven't got a major problem with it. He's 16 now as well. And to be honest, I mean, you know, where TV is now, even in sort of early evening shows, there is a bit of language and sexual innuendo and stuff like that. So I haven't got a major problem with it.
I suppose, arguably kids grow up a bit sooner, but I suppose some people could say, well, yeah, but you're encouraging that. But I think you're right.
I think Charlie's brought up in a way he knows when to do things, when to not things, well, generally, apart from at school. And, he knows that's what's proper and what isn't.
Yeah.
So that obviously helps.
Hmm. To be fair, my uncle lives next door, and at least once a weekend, we're in their house or they're in our house, in the kitchen, parents drinking and that. And there's
Charlie? Tell us. You know, careful, you'd have social services down there on Monday morning.
Yeah, what we do, we lock the kids in the room upstairs at one.
One in the afternoon, I mean, and start drinking.
Yeah, well, you're around it enough, and you hear it. And the thing is, you got to. It's just, that's the thing I like, it's just quick comebacks. And
so do you think that's one of the reasons, going back to my question just now, one of the reasons you're funny then is because you've been brought up in quite a quippy, sharp sort of environment? I mean, I know your dad, I know your mum, you know, and, you know, mum's brothers and so on, and, you know, they are a bit raucous.
That's exactly what it is, that's dead on there. My whole family just loves a laugh, jokes around, and I said this on Britain's Got Talent, that's all they do, is just... All they do is laugh and joke and
inspire and encourage you almost.
Banter and all that. Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And all my family are pretty funny. And I kind of get it from my parents, get it from my family and that.
Where do you see all this going then? Because you've done fantastically well, haven't you? I mean, we've mentioned four things that you've been on. I mean, some people are never on TV. You know, you said you're on telly all the time. In fact, are you going to carry on with the Harry and Paul thing? I mean, as the series goes on, are you in it?
I think there's
constantly
a few. I mean, I'm in one every episode.
Yeah.
But that's just that one character.
Yeah.
And I speak to Harry Enfield, because obviously him and Paul, they both produce it, cast it.
How are they? What are they like?
Oh, they're amazing. They're just the most normal people.
Down to earth.
Oh, yeah.
Paul is very normal. Harry's very eccentric, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, I kind of got there, and I kind of knew Paul Whitehouse from Harry Enfield and Chums, and he's changed a lot. He's changed a lot from Harry Enfield and Chums, and he come out of makeup van, and that's all it is. He's just literally big vans, and he's come out of makeup van, and I was kind of standing there, and my mum said hello, and he went, "Oh, you all right, love? You must be Charlie. See you later. I just got to go get some food." And I was like, "Who's that?" I was like, "That's Paul Whitehouse." I was like, "Don't look anything like him." But obviously, his makeup, costume, yeah, grey hair.
But they're nice to you then. And they turn their backs on you and just use you for the particular clip.
No, it's nothing like that.
So can you dish the dirt on him? Any gossip, anything you can tell us? You said Harry Enfield's a bit eccentric.
I went and played football at lunchtime. We obviously get an hour's break on set. I went and played football with some people, some of the crew I know, and Paul Whitehouse, when he sat in his trailer just on his laptop and that, turned round on the way back from like the AstroTurf, I was playing football, and there's Harry Enfield in costume chewing a bit of grass, laying on a towel in the middle of a field.
What, on his own?
Yeah, on his own, just asleep.
Really?
I was kind of like, okay, don't really know what he's doing there.
Just sitting there thinking.
Yeah, I think that's what he does. You know, he's
very clever guy, isn't he? They both are.
He's always in character, and he works so hard, because if he's doing a scene, it could be halfway through a take, and he'll go, "Wait, cut there, stop that. I think I like it if this does this," and he'll make people work. He'll ask people to work.
So he really cares
for an
about
extra
it.
Couple of hours, just to get one shot or have one idea. Even if it doesn't pull it off, he'll be like, "Well, we tried."
So he's quite passionate about the content.
They're very good.
And also, I mean, the thing that really impressed me, you're sort of there, and I'm sort of in awe of Harry and Paul, you know, because I grew up loving them. And Charlie's there, and then Charlie's coming up with a couple of ideas, and then Paul White is going, "Harry, come and listen to this. Charlie's just come up with an idea." And two or three of his ideas, they actually use in the show.
Really?
Yeah, they said, "Charlie, that's great." It's not like they just listen to from your take on it, because you are a youngster.
To be honest, you're hanging around all day.
All day with them. And
you're absorbing it, aren't you, I guess?
Well, yeah, the thing is, when I kind of was with Phil and Keely on Ashes to Ashes, that was the first thing I'd done around big actors that I heard of. And I kind of thought, "Oh my god, this is going to be awful. What am I?" And I knew the driver from School of Comedy. He also drove me on School of Comedy. So I was talking to him, like, I was like, "Oh my god, what are they like, George, what are they like? Are they going to shout at me if I muck up my lines, George?" I was like, literally, I was so scared. And then I got in the lift, and I knew Phil Glenstein, but I didn't know Keely Hills. And I was in the lift going up to set, and there's this girl here with a script and a cup of tea and curls in her hair, and Dad's going, "You alright?" And he was literally itchy, and he was just like, "Oh my god, I'm on the lift with Keely Holt."
Yeah, I bet he was, because your mum's not listening.
Yeah, I know, yeah. And then I was like, "Dad, pick your chin up a bit, and who is that?" And he was like, "It's Keely Holt."
So where are we going from here then, do you think? Where would you like it to go? I mean, do you fancy yourself writing, producing, directing?
I'd love to be a writer, but my mum has spoken to Lee Evans once, and he says all he does is, when he's not actually performing, he sits down and he writes stuff, you know, and comedy routines and that. But I've not so much sat down and had write things, but I just have a think sometimes of this could be really used, really funny, because I'm sure it happens to all loads of families.
Comedy ideas and stuff. And that's where it comes from, I suppose, isn't it? In terms of a stand-up routine. Yeah. Billy Connolly, for instance, he famously says, you know, he'd be very nervous before going on stage, would actually have no script at all, doesn't know what he's going to say.
Yeah.
He gets on and he gets inspired, I guess, by the audience, and he just sits down and does an act for an hour and a half, and it's all from experience and observations and stuff.
It is. I mean, life observation is a lot of... Lee Evans is a lot of life observations and just making it into a funny situation. I mean, we've all done it. We've all sat around and chatted, "Did you see that?" Oh, and then you just sort of, you just run on with it, don't you?
Well, I say writing's not the easy bit, but once you've got a good idea, it's difficult, because
it's nurturing,
I thought to myself, okay, I've got this good idea, and it might not even be funny. I'm probably going to, like, it's not funny at all, but it's like, I don't know if any other family does this, but I had this idea of, when I walk into the lounge, my mum's on the sofa with a drink down by the chair. She goes, watch my tea, you know what I mean? Like, don't knock my drink over. And I thought, well, that could be really funny if it happens everywhere else.
Where
could you try it out? Because obviously I'm not old enough to go to these comedy clubs in London.
But aren't you? I mean, do they say you can't?
18, pretty much.
18 got to be. But maybe there's a market there. I mean, you speak to Mark Reed, Brentwood Theatre. Maybe there's, you know, I mean, I know not just talent, but
comedy,
actually,
yeah.
Well, yeah, have a tour. Essex Tour or something.
Comedy Club or something, yeah, that'd be funny.
Who knows? And of course, you realise, talking of sort of who you model yourself on and who inspires you, I model myself on Alan Partridge, you realise that, don't you?
Oh, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, anyway.
I thought it was Christopher Biggins.
Sorry. On that note, Christopher Biggins. Right, okay, get my head around that. Okay, right, let's have some more music and then we'll come back in a sec. Phoenix FM, Russell Quirk on the Soapbox. It is 18 minutes to 8 o'clock. Bananarama and something along the lines of Na Na Hey Hey, I think. Did I say that right? Yeah, I think I did. Russell Quirk on the Phoenix FM Soapbox, 98 FM, and on phoenixfm.com with Charlie Wernham of, very famously, Britain's Got Talent and lots of other shows, and by the sounds of it, lots and lots more. Sitting here with his old man Dave, who didn't really need to come along to look after him. He just wanted to come along just to be on the radio, I think, Dave, didn't you?
Thanks very much.
To keep talking about Quest Printing. He's got big banners
Quest
here.
Printing.
He's holding them up saying, mention Quest Print and Design in Moore's
on
Place.
On banners I actually printed. Yeah, right.
Right, important question, Charlie. What's Amanda Holden like? Did you fancy her?
Yes, and yes.
You hesitated there.
I don't know. Yeah,
she seems very nice.
She is very nice.
Is she very nice?
Yes, she is. She's very normal. Like I keep saying now, the celebrities I've met are all really normal. Hmm. Obviously, apart from Simon Cowell, who's just like, oh, me. You know what I mean?
Is he? But, so did you get to talk to them outside of being on the stage?
Yeah.
You got to know them a little bit.
Yeah, well, you have the studio and you kind of have the canteen where obviously you eat, and then the studio where you perform. And the dressing rooms are all there, so you've got your own dressing room. And they've got the free ones downstairs along alongside Anna and Dick. And, you know, I was, the canteen's next door, so you can see him. And obviously, I saw Simon Cowell come down, and I spoke to him a couple of times, and he's really nice. He's nothing like he is on, obviously, he is like he is on telly. He would speak his mind and give you really good advice. He knows what he's talking about, and he's just... He's amazing. I really liked him. But Piers Morgan was funny. We were just, my whole family.
I think Piers Morgan tries to be a bit like me.
I heard Piers Morgan tried to be a bit like Russell Crowe.
You see the silence there.
I think I'm sure I read that somewhere. Piers Morgan bases himself on Russell Crowe. I'm sure I read it somewhere.
He'd like to be, I think.
Page 27 of the Gazette, I'm sure it was.
No, that's... Piers Morgan's funny. And but Amanda Holden, she was...
Fancy ball.
She was.
Come on, cut to the chase. She's fancy ball.
Was really.
You've got to be
good.
Honest.
She come in one day with on a motorbike. She has a motorbike, and she come in.
Is she?
Yeah. She like drives to work on a motorbike when the others get chauffeurs and that. And she's just so normal as well. But when she's all dollied up with her makeup on, that's not all right actually.
Right.
Like this
dollied up.
This just shows how
she's
much.
She's all right actually.
This just shows how much my family have got guts and love a laugh. My little cousin Marcus, I was backstage, and they have a when you see the adverts, they have a warm up bloke come on, do a couple of jokes, and go, "Is there any people here who have any questions for the judges?" And my little cousin's put his hand up. I don't know. He must have been like 11, 12 at the time, and gone, "Can Amanda give me a kiss?" She's gone running down at her front.
Did
and
she?
He goes,
did
she? Yeah,
no, he ran down and she kissed him.
So, Dave, why didn't you say that? Can Amanda give me a kiss?
I was obviously too slow, yeah.
And he was scared.
She sounds like a very nice lady indeed.
Yeah, she was.
Good. Well, let's talk about some of the people you were on with, because there were some weird and wonderful acts, weren't there?
Yeah, I
remember. I had to do a bit of research on this, because there's been, I think, four series now.
It's a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, you were
a couple of years ago.
Second one, weren't you? So who did you have on with you? You had that stupid dog act thing, didn't you, where the dog sort of runs in and out of someone's legs.
Yeah,
they got through to the final and you didn't. What's all that about?
Well, I thought it was very clever. It was the way she changed it to clever, but after you've seen it once or twice,
it's just a dog running up and down the stage.
It was quite amusing, because what you do when you get there, all the acts for the whole week are in the same hotel.
Yeah,
so you're even the dog?
No, but the thing is, the hotel they booked, no dogs allowed. Yeah. So she had to stay, her and the dog
had to stay in the Premier Inn over the road.
I think it was over the Premier Room of Lenny Emery. I think
so
that was
all like, I've got five star, you know, all these, the bell.
No dogs
bell
allowed.
Pops. No dogs allowed in the
and
hotel.
It's a dog act.
She was like, I'm staying at the Premier Inn. But to be honest, the dog was probably much more well behaved than some of the acts in the hotel, to be honest with you.
Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah.
Can you elaborate?
I remember, I don't know if you know, remember Anya Sparks, you know, Big Girls Power, Big Dancer. She was the dancer.
Oh, right. Yes, I think
I
do.
You know, she got through to semi-final somehow. And
Well, she was... Was this the hula hoop one?
No,
she was just a big girl, just
dance. She was...
Right. Okay.
I wouldn't call it dancing. I don't know what... I don't know what it was. Epileptic fit was a bit more some of the lines.
What on demand?
Yeah. Right. But, she come back and we saw her come in with about 20 Domino's pizzas. So I thought, that can't be all for her.
You know, Britain's Got Talent, sponsored by Domino's pizzas.
Oh, right. So they were free, she filled her boots.
Did that cost you? She was like, nothing, they're free. So she sat down, we're in the lobby of the hotel, in the bar, and we've all having like five, we had pizza every night. It was great, we had Domino's
free.
Pizza.
Only because she found out it was free.
What, but she had 20?
Well, no, she brought in 20 for us, but we all kind of thought,
but
she
had 19,
share
shared one between the rest.
It doesn't look good, that sort of size woman walking up the road with 20 pizzas.
Yeah, it sounds like her talent, rather than shaking in some strange way on the stage, should have been how many pizzas she could eat.
The man who did the Ferrero Rochers, but ending with pizzas.
So who else was on it with you then? You had some really good acts, actually.
Yeah, the Scottish choir boy.
Yeah, Paul.
No, that was it wasn't
Andrew Johnson.
Andrew Johnson.
The guy who was who got through with the crying and the bully, got bullied, yeah?
I watched his audition.
He was fantastic.
He was good.
He had a very good voice until it broke.
Yeah.
And he was very good on the audition. I thought, you know, and it was like, I get bullied.
Because I'm a choir boy here.
I'm a choir boy. I get bullied. I don't like singing in front of people.
Yeah, so did you take advantage of that and rip into him?
Well, no. I didn't bully him.
Hardly.
No. I got to the hotel and I kind of saw some people. Saw George, who I've met before. Like,
George Sampson, the winner.
A bit before, you know, I spoke to him. Because
you said you thought he was a bit arrogant, didn't you?
No.
No, you didn't. I'm joking.
No.
No. I really liked him, and we kind of had a laugh together. We was walking up to Andrew, the guy who supposedly got bullied, and he was a 6 foot Scottish rugby player. And I thought, you don't get bullied. And I thought to him, right, we'll soon see if his voice comes out. He's like, hello, my name's Andrew. It wasn't like that. When you're a mate, he went, hello, my name's Andrew. And I was like, really Scottish. And I'm like, hello, mate, how are you? Are you Paul? And I was like, oh, yeah, I was Scottish. And I was really scared of him. And
he was surprised.
Really big. I was like, oh, you don't get bullied.
No, especially with a Pakistani sort of Scottish accent.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there.
So who else was on it then? So you had George Sampson, you mentioned, obviously won it. I must admit, I was a little bit surprised that he won it, because he's obviously talented, but
yeah,
I don't know if
the whole story thing, coming back after being rejected the year before. Don't forget, he was in it first year and they sent him away.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And they never put him through, and
did
then
you
he
think so that there was
went
a bit
away
of
and got better.
A sympathy
apparently.
Vote. And
yeah,
I remember,
obviously.
I can never remember how much of it is the audience or the audience at home
good.
And how much of it is the judges that actually determine.
For these semi-finals, it is public vote, yeah? So it's all about public vote, and I'm sure that, you know, there are certain types of people, no matter how good I thought an act was, probably I wouldn't ever pick up my phone and vote. But young girls vote. Young girls, with their text, they like to vote. You
my
can vote by text.
My granddad was backstage with me and he went, what's your number? I went, why? He went, I'm going to vote for you. I went, granddad, don't waste your money. Just put your phone away and don't worry about it.
But, I'll vote for you.
So, yeah. There you go. Yeah, we don't mind taking your money.
That's two. That's two whole
people. I had it on speed, though. I have three.
Yeah, so who else was on there? Escala. They were four rather lovely ladies that played.
They were very nice, actually.
And yeah, I think they've gone on to success. They do a lot of corporate stuff.
They do a lot of the Sky Sports music now, don't they? The compositions.
Oh, do they?
A lot of the adverts.
So they were violins and cellos.
Yeah, those electronic
ones, yeah.
They were electric, in fact.
Mm. Yeah.
They were electric. Farrell Smith.
Yes, Farrell,
she's made
an
album, I think.
She's doing very well, I think, yeah. She's,
do you keep in touch with any of them? We don't like them very much.
My mum keeps in touch with Anya, the 20
pizza eater, yep.
And
what, because your mum likes pizza? You know your mum's just rung. In fact, your sister's just rung.
She wished me happy birthday. Good way to go home.
Happy
birthday. Shout out to Libby Wernham then. Anya and Tracy Lee Collins, the man who was a...
This is in the nicest possible way, the large gentleman
weirdo
in the dress.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might say that.
Transvestite.
Yeah, who
sang. Well, no,
he
wasn't originally. He went on there and was like...
Oh, they told... Is this the one where they told him to be different and
came back dressed
like
as a woman.
I'd like to see you as a lady. And
who said that? Simon Cowell?
Well, Piers Morgan. I think
Piers Morgan. Oh, that explains it.
Oh, was it Amanda? Yeah, I'd like to see you as a lady.
I'd like to see you as a lady and... her being the only one, because it wasn't a pretty sight, to be honest with you. You know, he went out there dressed as a lady and sung and got to the final. So, you know,
actually, a really funny, like, more camp than a field of tents.
He comes to my
40th birthday
party.
He's a really funny guy, though. Really quick witted, funny guy.
Mm.
Well, guy.
Woman.
Moving.
Man.
Guy.
Yeah.
You know, in a wide, loose,
in a loose sense.
Yeah, my mum keeps in touch with all of them, but I do keep in touch with George and that.
I see him
around quite a bit because I'm always up London doing auditions and he lived up there for a bit.
Yeah. Haven't heard much from him. I think he did a little tour or something.
He's got a film out.
He's back on Breakfast News a few weeks ago.
There's a film out now, isn't there, with Diversity in Georgia, Flawless, and the other.
Produced by Simon Cowell, the multi billion entertainment.
He's like that. You get signed for a long period if you're actually in it.
Yeah, I bet you do. Well, listen, we're going to have one more track, which is the specials. We're keeping it to sort of a bit. Is it mine and Dave's era here, Charlie?
Yeah.
Specials.
I like them.
Rudy. We'll be back. We're just going to quickly talk about your school, because we've got to talk about that as you've given me a bit stick. So, be back in a sec.
Message to you.
special as a message to you, Rudy. We're on the soapbox on a Friday night with Charlie Wernham and Dave Wernham, his father. We're talking about Charlie's blossoming career, and it seems to be going very well, Charlie, as we've been saying. And you're hoping, obviously, it's going to go further. But what about the school thing?
I love school.
Yeah, you love school, but your dad keeps telling me that, you know, you get into a little bit of bother here and there and detention here and there and so on. So tell us about that.
I don't know. I still think school's important.
It is. You're saying the right things to everyone listening.
Yeah. No, it is important because I always think, everyone's like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And obviously acting is, it's like when you're five. Oh, I want to be an actor when I grow up. Like, obviously it's only a fantasy, but for the moment it still seems like it could still work out. But if it does, that'd be amazing.
Do you think you're different at school because of your career stuff? And does it interrupt school, I suppose? Because you're obviously always out and about doing auditions and shows and stuff.
No, a lot of the time, I wouldn't say it's really interrupted school or affected me in my grades and that. Because
you'd still be getting detentions otherwise.
Yeah, I would, yeah.
career, Charlie would still be in there. The only reason he gets less detentions than from being an actor is because he's away from it a lot more.
So, guys, we've got to finish because we're about 30 seconds away from the news, I'm afraid. It's been very, very interesting, very enjoyable talking to you. Thank you very, very much for coming on.
Thank you, Russ.
We'll have you back, I think. Next week, we've got another Brentwood personality, a chap by the name of Robin Bailey, who is a BBC sports presenter. You've probably seen him on BBC News 24. He also does a golf show, which is rather topical at the moment. He's on next week, so I'll see you then.
On the hour, across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
From the Sky News Centre at 8. A couple have been jailed for a total of 14 years for allowing their two adopted daughters to be abused by paedophiles. The adoptive father was also found guilty in August of sexually abusing the elder child. He's been jailed